It is a real pleasure for me to be with you this morning. I've been here a couple of times before to preach and then at Kleber's wonderful ordination service, and it is always an honor to have time with you. And I want to thank especially the musicians this morning for creating for me such a hallowed space to open me up to worship. I didn't even really want to say hi when I first got up here because that space was just so beautifully prepared and meditative for me. I just wanted to move into that. So thank you. The holidays are over. Whew. Isn't it funny how we have that response to the holidays that are supposed to be the most wonderful time of the year? What is that about? I suppose it's about all the expectations to be the idyllic Norman Rockwell family with the latest and most creative Martha Stewart-esque decorations. I suppose our fatigue is about all the running to get the presents that we think Santa himself would have gotten, and I don't see any little ones that I'm betraying any confidence in. And then having to spend all that time, way too much time, in godforsaken lines at stores that seem to seep any energy that we did have, when we have to wait and wait in lines. I think it's also about the worry of money, feeling squeezed, overspent, unsure of how everything will get paid for. I think there is a part of us that just yearns again for normal, ordinary, predictable times without all those expectations. And that isn't even talking about the food. My partner over here, Phyllis, says that she dreads going to parties because of all the food. Now, this is how I hear it, and she'll correct me if I say this a little wrong. I think she tries so hard to watch what she eats and finds herself just feeling out of control, and I don't think she's alone in that. I've had that feeling too. I think it's especially hard when she goes with me to one of my company's parties because she doesn't know people as much, but I haven't heard her complain so much about the socialization aspect as much about the food. And I think the socialization kind of becomes around the table, the stuff at the table. I don't know, I love the parties, and that's because I love to eat. Oh well, I always figure that I can take any of those extra pounds off later. But then comes the after New Year's diet and exercise resolve that we are blasted with, seemingly the second after the ball in Times Square drops. You know what I mean? What is that about? Okay, it is about companies making money. Don't forget that. They want our money. But really, there is something in all that subliminal commercial stuff that pushes into our consciences. You shouldn't eat that. You better start that workout. Do I see some extra pounds on you? You better get going on that diet. All of it is a bit crazy making, and we can't wait to get past it. And so we make resolutions. Have any of you ever really found that process of making resolutions to be helpful in your lives? Okay, you don't have to answer. Oh, okay, one person says yes. Okay, awesome. Well, I never have, and again, I don't think I'm alone. It's usually in response to one of those ads. Okay, I'll lose that 10 pounds, or I'll get back to the gym, or I'll watch my money more, or I won't have that extra drink. Usually, for most, those New Year's resolutions are pretty shallow. And it seems as if one year after the other, we go through the same motions. With good intentions, we make them. We hold true to them for a while. Then we get lazy or stressed, and we start smoking again. Or we make that shopping trip that we really shouldn't have, and that extra drink. And the pounds creep up and up, and our guilt increases, and we just settle back into that familiar lull of being. Before we know it, it's the dreaded, did I say dreaded, holidays again the next year. Now, this next story I'm going to tell you, I wouldn't tell to any other congregation, and you'll understand why in a moment. Last year when I came here to preach, I had a moment that I had to confront that I had put on a few extra pounds. If I had been wearing a clergy robe, or if the altar area up here had high railings, it would have been less of a big deal. But I was wearing a suit. Well, Mary and I came into the sanctuary just a few minutes before the service was to begin, again to listen to the music, to get in the right frame of mind, meditative, to center. And as I sat down, my zipper busted on my pants. That's a guest preacher's nightmare. At least if it's your own church, you know where things are and you can gloss over it. I couldn't believe it. It is life. So in this moment, flashing before my eyes, I thought, okay, I have a jacket on. Would this cover me enough? And then it's like, I don't want anyone to see my underwear. And then it's, will this distract me so much through the service that I won't be able to focus on what I'm here for? That wouldn't be a good thing. And then it's, how much time is it before the organist is done with the prelude? Can I sneak out and find a pin? And where would I go to find a pin? Would Kleber have one in his desk? He wouldn't mind. He's a good friend of mine. Oh, he's a guy. He wouldn't have one. Well, I decided that I did need to do something. And so I enlisted Mary's help. We stepped away from the sanctuary. I told her what was happening. She rummaged through her purse, and the miracle of the day was she had a pin. So I went into the bathroom, secured my pants, pulled my jacket over my torso, and tried once again to center and to focus and to make myself appropriate for worship. Oh boy. And amazingly, the prelude was still going on when I came back. Now, I don't know if they saw something and played again. I don't know. Do any of you remember? But yeah. So I'm wearing something that fits me a little more comfortably today, and there's no zipper. And no, I haven't taken off those pounds. And yes, I did resolve to do so. Thanks for letting me share that funny story. The years come, the years go. We rarely change. Most of the time, it seems like we go through the motions. We like to play games at my house. A couple of games that kind of mimic the cycle of life in our lives are Monopoly and the game of life. And nearly everyone knows Monopoly. in it you're moving along the board, making money as you begin the game, and then every time you make another lap around. The goal is to buy property, to charge people rent, to make money, to keep from going to jail. That is, unless you have no money, then you want to go to jail. And to keep from going bankrupt. The familiar cycle over and over again until one person has stepped on everyone else, taken all of their life savings by monopolizing all the property and basically eating one else alive. My father says it something like this: "That's such a nice game." Such a good example of how we should really be living. I remember one time when my daughter Leslie, who's also over here, she's 15, and when she was, I'd say, 8 or 9, and you know, we had played the kind of junior games, the versions of the games, and she was getting to be a little bit more savvy and a bit more able to make decisions herself. And so we were starting to kind of take off the kid gloves about, you know, letting her win or at least have advantage. And Monopoly can be pretty brutal, you know. And this one game, she just, and I think it was the first time we really were honest with her about how the game goes, and just played it. And she lost horribly. And it really hurt her ego. I mean, she was practically, I mean, it breaks my heart to think of now. It's like, how could I do that to her? But anyway, she said, "I'm never going to play this game again, not till I'm 18. Well, the other night when I came home from work, she and her friends were around the table playing Monopoly. Another game that tries to be a bit more real to life is the game Life. In it, people go from young adulthood to retirement, hoping to, again, make as much money as possible, as if that's what life was all about. Initially, every player has to decide if they're going to go to college or not. So if they don't go to college, there are these limited jobs they can get. If they do go in college, there's a wider expanse of jobs they can get. But they're at some disadvantages because they have to go to school first, and that takes time, and they can't earn money while they're in school. And they have to take out loans, and of course, then they have to pay those back, and so that sets them back. One of the things we've learned in this game is that there's no benefit to going to college financially. Just don't even go. No. Just get a job and you'll make more money than you would if you went to college. What kind of example is that to teach our children? It's crazy. Sometimes I think that we as society teach our kids, and we practice ourselves, that life is about little more than going through the motions of life. Year after year, round we go. We make money, we spend money. We try not to be taken advantage of by others. We try to keep from getting caught by the cops, doing what we shouldn't. And we look for opportunities to get the upper hand over someone else. Sometimes it seems like we do little more than live out the Monopoly game. Is life only about passing go and collecting our $200 over and over again? Are we just going through the motions of life year after year after year? Is there any way to begin to have a better focus to bring about change in our lives or the lives of those around us? Or even, dare we dream change in the world? I've been churning the ideas that I'm sharing with you in this sermon over since early fall, when our Jewish friends had their high and holy days, their New Year. I certainly wish that we could learn from them. Their high and holy days are not about commercial excess. Theirs are about true personal reflection and intentional ways of trying to make change in their lives. Out of these changes comes the hope that little by little, life can be better for everyone, that we can make the world a better place. Today, I want to suggest that the Jewish New Year is a much better model for going from one year to the next than what the dominant culture celebrates and calls New Year's. Let me share some of my understanding of these deeply spiritual days. Now, let me state a disclaimer here. I will be the first to say that my experience of Judaism is limited. Some of you may have more experience than I do. Yet, I have had and continue to have dear Jewish friends and consider myself to be a student of all religions. But I know that since my upbringing was in Christianity, that I have limited